Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. In this hour, we're talking about Superior's Commission on Communities of Color. Superior Mayor Jim Payne created the group earlier this year. And last week, Mayor Payne and Commission member Stefan Witherspoon sat down with me and People of Color host Henry Banks to talk about the work that's being done.
It's been 6 months, and so the commission is in place. Can you update us as to what has happened in that six-month period?
Do you want to start? Should I go?
You go.
I'm happy to. So, well, it met, which was pretty historic. So the first couple of weeks and months were really about orienting the commission on its own mission, deciding what it was going to do. And as you might remember from when we first had this conversation, I had to write a mission to give to the council and say, hey, what am I trying to do here? I was really passionate about turning this over to the members themselves, that the mission of of representing communities of color should fall to people of color. And so appointing the commission and deciding on its focus was one of the first and most important things that they did. Since then, they've had a couple of key conversations. I think some of the most relevant and telling were discussing the Husky Refinery fire and how that impacted some marginalized or vulnerable communities, and then debate and discussion on a policy that we just passed last night, which was the decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana.
Stefan?
Yeah, so we met and you know, we just kind of wanted to get, you know, acquainted with, you know, getting to know each other, and then, you know, what issues we're going to tackle. All in all, I think, you know, we're getting our feet wet, and I think it's important to have an African heritage voice in Superior finally, and it's long overdue. So this is going to be a very interesting and continuous, and we are very happy, and we commend the mayor for inviting us to do so. We want to tackle the tough issues, and we will do so in a way where it's going to be transparent, and so we can get results.
So you say African heritage and the responsibility of making sure that the African heritage community has a place to come together, really, and talk about issues and concerns in Superior, Wisconsin. This is a commission of color, right? Mm-hmm. What is the makeup of the Superior Commission that represents communities of color? Is it all African heritage, or is there any effort underway to make sure that the populations that are marginalized in communities such as Superior are at the table as well?
Yeah, so let me correct myself. So there are some, you know, Native American, you know, people on the board as well. I think we have a couple people. But, you know, we all need a voice. And so, like I said, we're just learning. You know, we need to learn, you know, a lot of things that the mayor needs, you know, for us to have on the table so we can do things properly and by protocol.
Sure. And so the reason I ask that question, so setting myself up to ask this question. So as a commission, how are you working to advance racial justice, racial equity in the city of Superior and possibly in this region?
I mean, I just think by having our voice heard, I think, you know, our community, you know, needs to show up more to, you know, the city council meetings and such. You know, and with being on the fire and police commission as well, I just think that it's just time, you know, that we show up and that the door is open for us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good to be invited in, but, we can plow our way in as well.
Sure. Yeah, if I could add to that, too, I think I'm pleased with a lot of the steps that Superior has taken in recent years to provide more diversity of voices in some of our systems of power. As Stefan mentioned, you know, we've brought some more people of color into major powerful bodies like the Police and Fire Commission. The city just elected the first Indigenous person to the city council in its history, as far as I know, in the form of Councillor Jenny Van Sickle. And but it's one thing to be that voice on a on a commission, but when Mr. Witherspoon chairs the Police and Fire Commission, he is not the black man on the commission.
Right.
He can be a representative for his community in that respect, but he also has to represent all of Superior. He has to be a police and fire commissioner. He has to be a chairman in that respect as well. One of the purposes of the Commission of Communities of Color is that you don't have an obligation necessarily to serve the rest of the community. Your obligation in that room is to serve communities of color, to speak on their behalf. And I think that's why it was important to me to appoint advocates, people with a proven history of advocacy, to that commission. And so one of the things that the commission the very first recommendation they brought to me was appoint more people to this. You need other voices than just ours. It was I don't know if it was a mistake or not. It might have been. It was predominantly appointed of African heritage people. And the first thing they said was, you need some other colors in here, Mayor. And so
I kind of expected that, but you know, yeah. It's just good to hear that said here today.
Sure, sure. And you know, that was I hope I made that error in good faith, but it was an error nonetheless. And so when we looked around at who is not being represented, you know, we have to approach with a certain amount of sensitivity and respect bringing Indigenous peoples onto that board, because Indigenous peoples recognize themselves as sovereign nations within our community, and you want to be that is a very different relationship to this place and the space than people of African heritage. And Superior, what we often forget but can't when we're sitting at this university, has a very large and vibrant international community, particularly in the form of the student body of UW-Superior. So those are voices that are potentially very vulnerable to exploitation and marginalization, but are also very important contributors to this community. So there's an opportunity too, now that school's back in session, we can get some more international voices brought onto that commission.
You're listening to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. I want to say right now that Dr. Jarrell Benton and Kim Young, also members of the commission, could not be here tonight. They're both out ill, and we wish them all the best as they recover from their illnesses. So, Danielle, I'm wondering if you have a couple of questions.
I do. You know, Stefan, I was just curious, you know, as you're doing this work on the commission, like, how are you working with community members to find out what they feel are some of the issues that they would like to see addressed, or are they contacting you, and how's that working?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I pride myself on being out in the community, you know, because you have to know the community members in order to fight for them. You know, often, you know, we hear people say, you know, there's representatives for the black community, or, you know, advocates, and that's true. But we also need for the community to come out and speak up as well, because unless you meet with the group and they appoint you as a representative, don't you talk for them, then you can represent the community. What I want to really, what's really important to me is making sure that the community comes out and their voices are heard. You know, it's been a long history of non-involvement of people of color, of the Indigenous community, and so on. So we need voices out here, and if we meet and they appoint me as representative, that's fine. But I cannot claim to say that I'm representing my whole community, because I want them all to come out to come together and to be together.
Why do you think that people haven't come out as much right now to express their opinions? You know, I mean, I hear a lot about a lack of trust on behalf of communities of color towards, frankly, white people. You know, is that it? Or what's preventing? Is it just, you know, regular everyday stresses where people are working jobs and they can't juggle it all?
You know, it's just old problems on new paper. I mean, basically just all problems on new paper. It's systemic. It's structural. And so that's why we are very happy with the mayor that he brought it up to say, hey, you know, we need your voice heard. Our voice has always been in the community, but we haven't had, you know, the invites to say, you know, come in and, you know, and share your opinion. You know, we have to do it through, you know, protest and other things of that nature. But, you know, this is, you know, the world is changing. And so now is the time to really, you know, acknowledge, you know, that there is a wide variety of cultures out there that love America, that want to be in America, that will represent America, and there's no specific identity to that American person. It's we're all beautiful colors, and so now is the time for people to come to the table and speak up and share their opinions and make stuff happen. It's all about action after we talk about business.
Okay, so I just need to ask this question. If you don't mind, I'm going to ask it from the standpoint of an operational budget. Boards and commissions need to have operational budgets to be effective and have the opportunity to get out in the community and have marketing opportunities, especially for a commission such as this one. Is there an operational budget, Mayor, to help with some of the marketing and some of those essential needs that this particular board has?
No. None of our commissions actually have a dedicated budget, but you're very right that we should be pursuing marketing of a lot of city efforts, but particularly the work that we're doing around especially vulnerable communities. So mm-hmm. there are two mayoral commissions, the Commission on Communities of Color and the Mayor's Commission on Disabilities. And neither of them get very much attention at all, you know, beyond conversations like this. So I actually included in my initial executive budget proposal a new position to operate out of the mayor's office called PR coordinator that had a number of responsibilities. But among them is the ability to help us speak about the work that we're doing. And so I wanted to have a staff available because I'm available at the service of this commission. The staff in my office are available, but we don't have anybody to speak on their behalf to the community except me. And I'm happy to do it, but we need to do more than we're currently doing. So I put that in the executive budget. That was removed by the city council. And so we're going to keep the money still there. We're going to keep pushing to have the tools we need to actually advocate for the things that we're trying to do. But your other point, one that I hadn't actually considered, that the commission would have its own budget to spend as it pleases. I mean, it would have to propose and the council would have to approve it, of course, but that's perfectly reasonable. And that's something that's been an oversight. We need to correct that.
Mr. Witherspoon, what do you think about that?
You know,
would you be for that?
Most definitely. You know, we need a budget to, you know, kind of, you know, make things happen, and we are fully in the know that, you know, you need money to do so. So we are for it, and we were definitely are going to address that issue, and hopefully we can solve it soon. Yeah.
I'm here with Mayor Jim Payne and also with Stefan Witherspoon. Stefan is a member of the Superior Wisconsin Commission on Communities of Color, and we're very happy that you're here. Danielle Kading from Wisconsin Public Radio News is here also. We have a lot of questions. I want to ask both of you, if you could tell our listeners right now what's working well with regard to the commission and what's not working. Stefan?
Well, you know, we're new, and so we only had a few meetings so far, so I can't really accurately say, you know, answer that question. But what I can say is, though, you know, the mission, and my personal thoughts is, you know, we need to get more people of color in City Hall, on the police force, in our school system, and we need to recruit people and be very intentional about that. We need to have people of color and power and Superior as well. That's what needs to happen.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. So what needs to work better? This is not just new, but we haven't done anything like it before. And one of the purposes of this commission is to oversee almost all of the operations within the city of Superior and the community at large. It has as big a job as the mayor's office, and that's very hard to do. You're asking people that have not done work like this. They've done plenty of advocacy before, but to come in and to review everything we do is a very daunting challenge, and it takes some time to really put that work together. I mean, I can remember back when I was at UW-Superior, I was part of a diversity committee that looked at a lot of issues about diversity, and it took us months to even identify the questions we were gonna ask. So that's something that's gonna take some time. What's gone well though is because the commission is made up of advocates, they're paying attention. They're paying attention to the things that we're doing, and they have been able to grab a couple of things. When the entire community was patting itself on the back for its response to the Husky Refinery fire, something that I'm still very proud of our community's response, both within the city and the community at large. But it was the Commission on Communities of Color that looked at it and said, hey, there's some people who we left out here who weren't fully represented in this response and in the story of that fire. They brought some of those voices forward. Also, when we talked about there was a policy review done by the commission on the decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana, and I was particularly pleased with the commission talking about that because that conversation could have gone one of two ways. When it was brought up, it's very easy to see that as trying to protect potheads. You know, trying to one step closer to the legalization of marijuana, you know, that when in reality, there was another purpose to that, that it was about protecting people that can get marginalized and persecuted by the criminal justice system for something that isn't that big a crime and is recognized as not that big a crime in other communities. And when it was brought forward in front of the commission, they brought up other very challenging issues that we had not considered at all. Namely, just because the police can charge people with a city ordinance violation rather than a state crime doesn't mean that they have to. And how are we going to track and see who now is getting a break and who really isn't?
So what are some of the priorities that you're pursuing right now on the commission, Stefan?
You know, well, like I said, we need more people of color, you know, working in our systems of, you know, the city hall, you know, the police force, you know, in our school system. You know, we need people of color in there, and we need to, you know, be represented. You know, we have a lot of youth and a lot of people who come here, you know, to, you know, start anew or to raise their families. And some of these families are people of color. And so we need to make sure that they're represented in a way where they can get a great education, you know, without, you know, being in an environment that, you know, could be considered hostile because of not having, you know, many people of color who are working there. So, you know, this is a good start. You know, this is a beginning to a real, you know, big issue on, you know, we need to just get more people of color in our system here in Superior. And so it's going to be a process, but we are committed to do so, and I'm excited about it.
You know, and Stefan's right. In fact, it's the very first meeting him and I had in my office after I was elected. That was the thing he challenged me with from the beginning. Hey, it's great. We believe you're on our side, Jim. You're a great guy. What are you doing to get people of color in power? We believe you support us. It's not good enough. What are you doing to get people of color in power? And it's a challenging question because there are very real barriers to people of color achieving very real power. And we may have made some progress, but we're not there yet. And so one of the things that I'd like to see the commission working on is helping us to remove some of those barriers. If I could just very briefly tell a story, something happened the other day. Somebody else that I've only met once in my life brought up, it was a young African-American gentleman that brought up, hey, how do we get people of color in positions of power? And my answer, I'm maybe a little too aggressive about this, is, hey, run for office. You know, we don't have people of color on the city council. We don't have people of color on the county board. You need to run for office. But there's barriers to that. It's far too easy for me to say, step up, run for office. It's easier for somebody like me to do that. And so we need to understand what's keeping people from taking that step, from walking into the clerk's office, from taking out the papers, from collecting the signatures, and getting on the ballot and winning. And so we can partner, those of us that have worked in electoral politics, that have achieved access, we should be working with the commission to bring that access to communities that are not well represented right now.
So having heard you say all of this, both of you, so here we are in 2018, almost 2019, and we still have this need for diversity and inclusion boards and commissions and committees and this, that, and the other. Is it your goal to dismantle the Commission on Communities of Color once we've achieved in our society, in our local community, equity? Would it be a goal to say, oh, we don't need this any longer because we're going to learn to work together, okay, as a society, as a community? Would there ever be a need to continue a commission such as this in Superior, Wisconsin?
You know, that's a great fallacy, fairy tale, to even think that, because it's been non-existent. And so, you know, when we speak on things of that nature, we're catching up. We're playing catch up. And so when we have, you know, more people of color in power positions, you have these boards and the commissions, that's the way it should be forever.
Forever. Interesting. So hearing you say that, Mr. Witherspoon, so what role then, in your opinion, does our allies play with regard to, so they say, as a white ally, they're sitting on a board or a commission and they're working in our best interest. How do we hold our allies accountable in the process of trying to get more people of color on boards and commissions?
You know, being very intentional. I think that we can start by having conversations. I think we can start by hanging out. I think we can start by having dinner together. I think we can start by having our kids play together. Those are the little things that add up to, you know, things that will matter in our lifetimes, because this is, you know, this is life. You know, this is, you know, this is not just, you know, boards and commissions to some of us. And this is a life choice, and it's a life career. And so we need to, you know, be very intentional on when we, you know, make these decisions and not turn back. And we do need champions. We need champions, you know, in our white allies. And we need them for stand up, even when we're not around saying, you know what, that's wrong. I don't agree with that. And here's why. We need champions like that, of all races and of all cultures, to stand up for each other, because we are the human race, man.
That's right. So I know, Mayor, it looked like you wanted to say something too. So
I already forgot. a minute ago, you asked whether we should look for a time when we could dismantle a commission like this. I agree with Mr. Witherspoon. I doubt we're going to see a time where we can even consider that. But even if we did, I'd point out, just because you built a great bridge doesn't mean you fire the engineers. The things that we are trying to do will require maintenance. There will always be challenges. A diverse community comes at a cost. It's worth it, and there's always going to be challenges that we have to address if we're going to bring diverse peoples together. Having a diverse community is having a strong community, but those bonds always have to be maintained and made stronger.
You're listening to Stefan Witherspoon with Superior's Commission on Communities of Color and Superior Mayor Jim Payne. We're going to take a short break for these announcements. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. In this hour, Stefan Witherspoon with Superior's Commission on Communities of Color talks with Superior Mayor Jim Payne, People of Color host Henry Banks, and myself about the commission's work in the city since it was created earlier this year.
We know we have a champion in the mayor of Superior, Wisconsin. Mayor Payne is actually, in my opinion, leading the way for the Twin Ports on how to do these kinds of things correctly. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would agree. He is a very intricate, important piece of this puzzle.
Mm-hmm. That's very kind. Thank you.
Yeah. Danielle?
Well, I was just going to ask, you know, as Henry said before, it's 2018, we're going on 2019, and we're all watching the news every day and seeing some of the examples of how racism still exists in society and inequality or lack of diversity and inclusion. But what about Superior? You know, I mean, I think there are people who live here that think, well, it's not the same as it is on the national scale here in our city. And how do you feel about that? I mean, how do you feel where we're at right now?
I mean, hey, I've had, you know, my forefathers and mothers, even back to slavery, have died with their blood, sweat, and tears. If they haven't fought back then, I wouldn't be here today talking with you today. I think that, you know, we are making strides. I know that our host, Henry, has made a lot of contributions, you know, to that work, you know, for the betterment of, you know, of all people. But, you know, it's always a work in progress. You know, it puzzles me because my heart loves people, all people. And so when we just talk about black and white, when there's other cultures, there's a plethora of many different languages, and we're still on black and white. And so something's wrong with that. So what I do personally is I just model the behavior that I want with our kids, with our elders, with you know, others on the community who may be different. Because you know what? We're not so different. And that's just the bottom line. And as my father told me, when I get in something, he told me this. He said, if a task is once begun, never leave it till it's done. Be it labor, great or small, do it well or not at all.
And you know, Dr. King talked all the time about this thing being the color line that will continue to keep us separated. And still, to this day, we're dealing with the color line.
You know, and I get asked by, you know, politicians and stuff like that, like, you know, what is your advice? You know, what are you, you know, what can you give me, you know, some friendly advice if I run or whatever? I say, know who you're fighting for. If you are going to represent some people or your community and you're running for office, know your community. That's why I pride myself being out in the community, knowing people, because they are the true voice. You know, and we can have galas and we can make, you know, websites look pretty and all this stuff, but the real work is in the community.
Can I add to that? Because that's such an important piece of advice. Know who you're fighting for. It's also important, once you get there, you got to fight for them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the hard part. And I'm not going to call anybody out, but a lot of the time we see people get elected with the support of a lot of people that have a vision for the community or have very real challenges that they're facing. And we get elected to fight for them, and then it gets hard. It's easy to say, I'm going to fight for you. It's a whole lot harder to go out and fight for you because, to your point, Danielle, the national environment is here. This is the national environment. We're part of the nation. I mean, have you seen Facebook? Because if you try to step up and fight for people that are vulnerable, that are marginalized, you get beat up pretty fast. Members of the Commission, on Communities of Color, have endured some of the most horrendous harassment and belittling and demeaning and bullying and outright attacks just for defending themselves, let alone other people. The reason they're on the commission is because they just keep taking the punches and they just keep fighting back. So that's the hard part. You talked about having champions out of allies, and that is important. But we have to be willing to risk this thing that we care so much about, having this power, having this access. We have to be willing to risk that to do what we said we were going to do.
Wow, that's very powerful. So we have young people that are coming up and growing and becoming professionals and doing all kinds of things in the community as activists and advocates and leaders. to the two of you, what would you say to young leaders in Superior about how they can get involved in making this community better for all people? I want to start with you, Mayor.
First, run. You have to take that next step. You have to pursue the next level of leadership. And you described young leaders. If somebody can in any meaningful way be described as a leader at all, I don't care how young they are, that person is qualified to run for office, especially local office. One of the things I've been very frustrated with recently is as I ask people and challenge people, particularly very good representatives from historically marginalized groups, women, the LGBTQ community, communities of color, indigenous peoples, I probably have a 90% failure rate at getting those people to run for office. It's too challenging. Or usually they're very responsible people leading very successful, responsible lives, and they don't want to do this poorly. One of the things I've had to start saying is, hey, folks, the bench for stupidity and ignorance and incompetence is pretty deep. Plenty of those folks are willing to run for office. We have to be willing to recognize where quality leaders exist, and we all have to support them running. One of the promises I make people when I tell them, hey, you know, you're qualified for office, because they never believe me. They say, now's not the right time. I was like, it's never the right time. We are going to make it your time. The people that love you, that care about you, that believe in you will make it the right time. That's a promise I make to them. So as a community, we have to make that promise come true. So if somebody is brave enough to step up and pursue leadership positions, we need to make sure that we're supporting them 100% because they're going to get beaten up.
The table has been set already. The table has been set already for our young leaders to step up. All they have to do is be bold and be strong and take their place at the table. And they are, and they are. But, you know, we have, as our history has shown us, people have fought, and died. Just for us to have this conversation today, like I said. And so I tell our young leaders is take your place at the table.
Again, you're listening to Stephon Witherspoon with Superior's Commission on Communities of Color and Superior Mayor Jim Payne. We're going to take a short break for these announcements. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. In this hour, we're talking about Superior's Commission on Communities of Color. Superior Mayor Jim Payne created the group earlier this year, and last week, Mayor Payne and Commission member Stephon Witherspoon sat down with me and People of Color host Henry Banks to talk about the work that's being done.
When are your meetings held? Where are they held? I'm sure they're open to the public.
Well, they're in the mayor's office. And so it's the first Monday of every month. We did meet at 1 o'clock, but I think we're going to start meeting around 3:30 or 4 now. And so, we're going to go with that, and we're just going to tackle issues and make sure that we make some tangible change.
Mm-hmm. Danielle.
Yeah. So if you guys had a way to describe it, or if you have it envisioned at all, what's your vision for the commission? What do you want to see come out of that in the future and reflected in the city?
My vision, of course, is to support the commission in pursuing goals that they see for communities of color and to support them in meeting the challenges facing communities of color. So I don't entirely know what that is. That's not my experience. And so I'm looking to be guided by other advocates so that I can use my office effectively on behalf of my citizens. That said, I want to see an open and inclusive, a fair and a diverse superior, one that recognizes and values all peoples and lives up to the real story of Superior, which is as a community where people come together, which is what this has always been, from the original indigenous peoples that lived here to the many different ethnicities of Europeans and eventually peoples from around the world converged in this place and continue to do so. That hasn't always been a very positive history, but that's not to say that can't be our future.
Yeah, and I just don't want to coexist. I want to work, you know, with other people, and I want to watch, you know, our community grow as we work together as a very diverse community, and that could be a lot of things, but my vision is to have you know, this commission and others just to be there and important, validated, and really have the mayor come to us when he needs us and say, hey, you know, this is, you know, what's going on. Here's a problem, and you know, and I want you guys' opinions, and I validate your opinions, and what should we do? It's not about one person or one culture. It's about us. It's about we. And so we got to have that mindset in Superior everywhere.
That's very good. Anything else?
I probably could. I don't know.
Well, I just want to mention this to both the mayor and to you, Stefan. Here at WPR Northwest, we're putting together three community conversations. And I'm just wondering if the commission, I'm sure you have to take it back to the commission for approval because that's how you operate. You want to do it the right way, obviously. But do you believe the commission might want to consider being a part of these community conversations? I know we're going to be holding two in Northwest Wisconsin. Of course, one at UWS, I believe, another in another part of Northwest Wisconsin, and then one in Duluth, Minnesota also. And so we're putting all this together. We're looking for panelists and this, that, and the other. Do you think the commission would want to be involved in that?
Well, I mean, no, I would have to check my colleagues on the commission, but I mean, you know, that is, you know, that's right up our alley. You know, we welcome the conversation, of course. But yeah, you know, we want to see everybody at the table. I mean, absolutely.
Absolutely. Mayor?
Yeah, I'm certainly happy to be involved. I would hope the commission would want to participate in that.
All right. Thank you. Danielle, I know you have another question or two. Before we let these awesome gentlemen go, they're very busy. We do thank you, Mayor Payne and Mr. Witherspoon, for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to be with us on People of Color today. And again, wishing Dr. Jarrell Benton and Kim Young all the best. Absolutely. As they recover from their illnesses.
Speedy recovery.
Absolutely.
So I guess I'm just thinking, you know, in everyday interactions with people in the community, what would you like to see? Like, what would be, like, something in the short term that you'd like to see from just meeting people on the street?
You know, I think it's already happening. In working with, you know, the chief of police here, in the cops on the streets, and in Duluth as well, you know, on an everyday basis, you know, when we deal with situations, whatever, it's about, you know, showing, you know, empathy and compassion and making sure that we, you know, validate people's existence. I mean, you know, just say hi or just to, you know that there's others out there who, you know, who suffer, who are going through things, and we need each other. And so, and I value those relationships, even though, you know, we can do better, of course, but it's about just coming together as a community.
Again, you've been listening to Stefan Witherspoon with Superior's Commission on Communities of Color and Superior Mayor Jim Payne. Mandatory minimum prison sentences left over from the war on drugs of the 1980s have resulted in countless separated families, even for those imprisoned for nonviolent crimes or on accessory charges. Cindy Shank of Lansing, Michigan, is one who experienced that. And during years of separation from her three daughters, one born just before her sentence began. She's now the subject of an HBO documentary airing Monday night, directed by her brother, who became a filmmaker and activist in the process. Robin Washington of the Marshall Project tells the story.
Remember that commercial a few years back about the guy who pretends to make movies for HBO? Rudy Valdez joins that HBO club Monday night with the premiere of his film, The Sentence. But he wasn't a director when he started filming 9 years ago, nor was he trying to impress anyone.
I was not a filmmaker when I started making this film. I became a filmmaker to make this film. I started filming my sister's girls the day after she went away to prison.
The prison sentence given to Cindy Schenck of Lansing, Michigan in 2007 was a mandatory minimum of 15 years. On drug conspiracy charges involving her former boyfriend. Although he died and she now was solidly middle class, not drug involved, and married to someone else, federal authorities arrested her 6 years later, showing up at her home as her young daughters slept. Valdez doesn't contest his sister's guilty verdict and began shooting home video only as a way for her to watch her daughters grow up. In those years, the girls only know their mother through expensive phone calls and sporadic visits, diminished to once a year after she was transferred to a prison across the country. It's a tearjerker displaying the toll on families of politically motivated mandatory prison terms, with the only hope, for some, a remote chance at clemency. I spoke with Valdez recently after a screening of his film at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York.
We were still sort of all in a daze after Cindy went away, and the next day we were at their house and the girls were all sitting on the couch and I just picked up the camera and started filming them. I was living in New York and I would fly back whenever I could. Her oldest daughter was having a dance recital, and completely unexpected, completely organically, Cindy calls.
Hello.
From a federal prison.
Here.
Hello, Mom.
I love you, Princess.
I continue filming, and she says this to Autumn. Do you know what Mommy's going to do while you go to dance? I'm going to lay down in my bed, I'm going to close my eyes, and I'm going to think about you. And that is the precise moment that this became a documentary.
What were you doing professionally?
I was a teacher. I taught pre-K and kindergarten. This husband and wife production team from the school I was teaching at allowed me to come and PA and intern on some of their stuff. So the style of this movie is sort of, I don't want to say all over the place, but it grows with me. I literally bought Filmmaking for Dummies.
Tell me about the girls. Were there times you picked up the camera and they said no? Or
no, it was this trust factor that I had with them built in. You know, they knew that I was Uncle Rudy and I was there to care and love for them and tell their story. When I was filming my father, he breaks down crying, and you know, I wanted nothing more at the time to put down the camera and say, we're going to be okay, or just hold him, just hug him. And I didn't. Something inside me said, hold your shot.
You call this an apolitical film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I call it an apolitical film because I don't really go into the politics of any of this. Who wrote these laws? Who has perpetuated these laws? Who has fought against these laws? Because I can't win anything by going back and placing blame on anybody. And so I didn't want to alienate anybody who could possibly help fix this problem.
What are your plans to use it as advocacy?
We took it to Capitol Hill, but one of my big goals is to take it to law schools, take it to future lawyers, future judges, people who are going to be enforcing these laws and these sentences in the future, and allow them to see sort of the compassion that needs to go into what they're doing.
Valdez has captured the attention of a bipartisan group of U.S. senators who have introduced legislation calling mandatory minimums ineffective and unfair. The HBO documentary film, The Sentence, debuts October 15th on HBO. For The Marshall Project, I'm Robin Washington.
Twin Ports resident Robin Washington is a commentary editor for The Marshall Project and also a regular contributor to KUWS. He can be reached at robin@robinwashington.com. And now it's time for a look back on some of the news of the week. High winds and waves caused damage and flooding along the Lake Superior shoreline, with the greatest impact seen in the Twin Ports. Duluth National Weather Service meteorologist Joe Moore says a ship reported hurricane-force winds as high as 86 miles an hour on the lake Wednesday north of Duluth.
We had numerous gusts over 50 miles an hour recorded within the Twin Ports area.
The waves caused flooding in Duluth Canal Park and parts of Ashland County. In Bayfield, Mike Radke with the Madeline Island Ferry says crews are repairing damages to boat ramps.
The combination of high water and these increasingly more frequent wind events are taking a toll. It's a challenge for us and, of course, Duluth and Superior and all around the lake.
Communities like Herbster, Ashland, and Washburn are still repairing some damage from last October's storm. Washburn City Administrator Scott Kluver says they're getting ready to repair an aging coal dock that's been eroded by waves.
And if that erosion continues,
and we have further storms, those sides of the wall may be damaged and lose their integrity. And so the entire sheeting around the dock could collapse.
The city received more than $1 million in state funding to repair the dock, but Kluver says Washburn still had to borrow roughly $400,000 to help with the fixes. In Ashland, storms and heavy rains have stressed the city's aging sewer infrastructure. The city has dealt with overflows of storm and waste runoff into Lake Superior when too much water enters the system. Ashland Mayor Depp Lewis says the city recently received $2 million in USDA funding for a digital monitoring system to detect leaks in its system.
And it helps us figure out where we need to be focusing our repairs. In our attention.
The city has been working with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources to address and reduce overflows into the lake. In Superior, Parks and Rec crews have been working to clean up downed trees and storm debris at 63 sites since Wednesday's storm. Superior Parks Recreation and Forestry Director Linda Cadott says they will be opening up the landfill to accept branches.
And trees less than 12 inches in diameter right now through the end of our last free landfill day, which I believe is next weekend.
Cadott says the city will not be doing curbside pickup. People who commit nonviolent offenses because of their drug addiction will be offered a choice between jail or rehab under the statewide pilot. $261,000 from the State Department of Justice will support the two-year project. Superior Police Chief Nick Alexander says people who take part would not be charged with a crime if they successfully complete treatment.
If you don't follow through, we are going to issue a warrant for the original offense. But I do think it's going to be able to put a lot of people in contact with the resources that they need.
Betsy Beiler with the Lake Superior Community Health Center in Superior says they will offer medication-assisted treatment, therapy, and primary care.
So we're looking at those things as well as doing case management, talking with them about food insecurity and housing and other things that are involved in rebuilding their lives and building a life that's worth living sober.
On top of state grants, the cost of the program would be covered through private insurance or Medicaid. The Wisconsin Department of Justice has released the names of officers involved in a Superior shooting last week. Officers George Gothner, Michael Kendall, and Christopher Woolery responded to a theft at a business in Superior last Friday. The suspect was found nearby in the city's Central Park neighborhood. Police and the Wisconsin DOJ say a confrontation occurred and the man was shot multiple times by officers. The DOJ said in a release today that the identity of the 19-year-old man who was shot is not being released because he has not been charged with a crime at this time. The man is recovering from his injuries and is in stable condition at a hospital in Duluth. The officers have been placed on administrative leave pending an investigation of the shooting. The U.S. Senate passed legislation on Wednesday that would authorize funding to build a roughly $1 billion new large lock at the Sioux Locks at Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. Adele Yorty with the Duluth Seaway Port Authority says only the Poe Lock can handle 1,000-foot ships that haul iron ore and other cargo from places like the Twin Ports to the Lower Lakes.
It really keeps the Port of Duluth Superior and the ore docks and Two Harbors and Silver Bay, for that matter, connected to the rest of the Great Lakes and obviously to the rest of the whole St. Lawrence Seaway system. If ship traffic would be cut off, were the locks to go down, in effect, this port would be cut off from the rest of the world.
A 2015 Department of Homeland Security report said failure of the lock for 6 months during the shipping season could put 11 million people out of work and trigger a nationwide recession. 22 counties, cities, and villages are asking voters to decide whether lawmakers should close the so-called dark store loophole. Barron County is among 17 counties asking voters whether lawmakers should close a loophole that allows operating stores to be valued as though they are vacant. Barron County Board Chairman Louis Oakey says that's unfair.
If we do not close that loophole, those places will have their property tax burden reduced and therefore push more of the burden on the residential property owner.
But Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce says it's the other way around. They say the tax burden has shifted from homeowners to businesses. An August memo from the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau says both residential and commercial properties have shouldered an increasing share of the tax burden in the last decade. At the same time, manufacturing and other properties have seen their taxes decline. Democrat Senator Janet Buley and State Representative Beth Myers will hold a listening session to collect feedback from residents on the dark store loophole next Thursday at the Park Falls Public Library from 5:30 to 7 p.m. A northern Wisconsin tribe has filed a federal lawsuit against Bayfield County. The tribe is disputing the county's authority to enforce zoning regulations on tribal lands. The Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa is asking a federal court to rule that Bayfield County has no right to enforce zoning laws on the tribe's reservation. Red Cliff's attorney, Brian Pearson, says the tribe has its own zoning rules.
When the county reaches inside the reservation and seeks to enforce its rules against the tribe and its members on their own land and the tribe's reservation, that's a direct infringement of the tribe's sovereignty and its right of self-government.
The county argues the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled certain properties within reservations can fall under state or county jurisdiction. Reading from a prepared statement, Bayfield County Administrator Mark Abels Allison says the lawsuit is related to county zoning on properties within the reservation known as fee simple lands.
Bayfield County is of the understanding that this practice is in accordance with state and federal law, and Bayfield County also recognizes and honors tribal zoning on trust lands.
Trust lands are held for tribes under treaty with the federal government. And that's a look back on some of the news of the week, and that's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior, or you can hear us on iTunes under Hear Me Out. You've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We hope to have you back with us again next Friday. Until then, have a great weekend.